Maybe a test done here with Farmers for Water Quality. Maybe I can help provide just a little bit more clarification with respect to the groundwater monitoring components. What we had done is we put forward an alternative to the groundwater monitoring or the individual monitoring in replace for some type of a representative cooperative groundwater monitoring program, development of a work plan, collect data, determine where there are gaps in that data information, and put forward a program to collect those gaps in information. Since we put that forward, the staff has added in a provision into the groundwater monitoring that would allow some type of a cooperative monitoring groundwater proposal to come forward. It's not very specific. We think it's a great step forward, and we would love to work with staff in trying to flesh out what that cooperative groundwater monitoring program would consist of.
But couldn't you still do that? Let's say that the order was adopted today. Couldn't you still come to staff and propose that kind of a groundwater monitoring program?
Absolutely. Well, with the new language in the September 1 version, there is the provision that would allow us to come forward with a cooperative groundwater monitoring program. Yeah, I agree. What we would have to deal with, I think, is some timing issues, because obviously there are certain requirements that will go into effect and clocks start ticking. And if we're working to develop a cooperative program that is approved by the executive officer and the staff, at the same time other requirements are going into effect, we have a little bit of a timing issue as to what do we get to work on, or do we have to go comply individually. So with this new language, this was recently added in the September version, I would agree that there seems to be, based upon my reading of the language, an opening to come forward with a cooperative groundwater monitoring program.
Okay. Thank you.
Should I ask Tess a question?
Yes.
Tess, this is a little different topic than what has been you've been discussing. You've been talking about monitoring. And what I want to ask you, as a representative that you are, whether you agree with the appropriateness of the findings that are in the ag order. I'm looking at page 4 of the ag order, findings 9 and 10. And they include language such as that the ag order would require individuals to ensure discharges don't contribute to the exceedance or don't contribute to the exceedance of numeric or narrative water quality standards. So sort of like you can monitor all you want, but one, and that's a really important part of this, but one bottom line is that individuals are required to ensure discharges don't contribute to exceed numeric or narrative water quality standards. And the next finding is similar. It says dischargers must meet water quality standards to achieve compliance. So do you as a representative of the growers agree that those are appropriate partial definitions of compliance?
Well, I mean, I think that clearly as the staff proposal is written, compliance is based upon complying with water quality standards. How you would determine compliance would be based upon if you had edge of field monitoring, you might use that information in order to determine, or if you went out and did an inspection and took a, you know, edge of field or, you know, sample in order to determine if an individual was complying. I agree that that is set forth in the staff proposal. I have some concerns that as it's set forward, it does not allow people to try to get towards compliance over a certain amount of time. I think that as it's drafted and the way some of the provisions are, and also based upon how some courts have recently interpreted stormwater permits at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal level, all of those provisions are taken individually, and direct compliance would be required on day one of adoption. And even though there are some time schedule provisions contained in the order, they're not allowed within the actual language of the order itself. So I think there's some drafting issues that would require absolute immediate edge of field compliance today and will not give people the opportunity to work towards compliance by changing the management practices.
Let me ask you something. I just want to interject. The Ninth Circuit was dealing with federal permits, right?
Absolutely.
We're not dealing with the federal permit here.
But you know what? It was a state-issued permit, and permit language and the interpretation of a court based upon reading narrow interpretation of language.
It's a state permit issuing federal regulations, issuing state regulations.
It's still an interpretation issue of a permit. right? Any court is still going to take the interpretation of the language and apply it and look at each provision to see does it act independently, regardless of whether it's a Clean Water Act or a Port Colon permit. The court's still going to look at it at the same fashion to determine do the provisions stand independently or do they work in conjunction with each other. I think you could have got the same result from the state court with this permit language as the Ninth Circuit came up with.
Are there any state court decisions that you're aware of that interpret?
These haven't been tested yet.
Okay.
Could I ask Tess a follow-up?
Sure. Actually, I think there is one back on that L.A. thing. I actually take that back, but I'm sorry, Mayor Delgado.
That's okay. If you want to finish that track.
That's right.
Go ahead.
So, in short, what you responded to me earlier was basically, you think that compliance with numeric and narrative standards are appropriate, but you would like growers to have time to get there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. I believe that is the ultimate goal of the Port Colon. Absolutely. It's time and a process to getting there.
Thank you.
Okay. You guys still have 16 minutes and 50 seconds, believe it or not. This is the beauty of having time when the board asks lots of questions.
The last comment I had was about the abandonment of wells.
Right.
So that is in the September? Was that in the September? Was it earlier? I can't remember. But it's in the last one for sure, right?
And the earlier ones.
Okay, yeah. So I think this is something that actually I am a little bit concerned about as a biologist. Some of our best drinking water is the lower aquifers because we haven't punctured them with a bunch of holes. And they are far enough away from potential leaching and contamination sources. So one of the things that I always worry about is unintended consequences. And so one of the things that I worry about is by getting rid of abandoned wells, and the reason I think I understand is really good. You don't want wells that are screened in multiple aquifers that might be carrying contaminants from one aquifer to another. Generally, what happens is when you take out a well that is cross-contaminating, you're going to go for better water. So you punch deeper and go farther down. I worry that one of the unintended consequences of decommissioning groundwater wells that are screened in multiple aquifers is that we're going to have a lot of people going deeper and increasing the potential for contamination of our deeper drinking water wells. So on some level, I would prefer that agriculture continue to use contaminated surface groundwater or lower quality water so that the deeper wells or the deeper aquifers aren't punctured as much. But again, it's pure conjecture. It's just a concern I have about potential unintended consequences.
If maybe somebody on staff can answer. I think that that provision just deals with wells that are already abandoned and sealing them, not with getting people to abandon wells.
That's correct, and it would be consistent with any local ordinance that already exists. And to answer the question, I think, or statement that Dr. Sorto has made about the potential for drilling new wells, they would still have to comply with any local ordinance or well construction permit in compliance with DWR standards, which is proper well construction.
So maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought there was an or statement in there. I thought it was abandoned or subject to cross-contamination, but it's just one line and
talking about language that has since been stricken.
Okay.
We can look at that.
I'm sure
further.
I've got lots of bad things in my memory. Okay. So I'm done.
Okay.
I'm going to have.
You guys have 14 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead.
And
is there someone else in your group?
Yeah, two more people, and
it
would be real short. And if there's some time at the end, maybe we'll take that. But
Mr. Chair, can I ask the staff a question?
Sure.
Talking about abandoned wells compared to the wells that are not being used, and I'm using the example the west side of Salinas, where they're using reclaimed water, and the 180-foot aquifer wells have been supposedly turned off, but I don't think they've been abandoned. They're still sitting there, but they're not being utilized in most cases. So you're not talking about those wells, are you, that are not active?
No. there's a definition that both DWR and Department of Public Health uses for abandoned wells, inactive or standby wells, or wells that are on reserve are not part of that.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, you guys. 14 minutes.
Can't believe Mark said I'd be real short.
Well, he wasn't referring to the length of your handlebars.
Yeah. By the way, Board Member Johnston, I had red highlights in my mustache before I started working on this stuff in 2004. Thank you, Chairman Young, and board members. I'm Deanna Merkley. I'm the Director of Water Resources for the California Farm Bureau. It has been my experience working on non-point source programs and agricultural programs since 2004 with this regional board and the other regional boards in my previous role at the State Water Board that these programs must have collaboration, cooperation, and good communications to build the trust necessary to be truly successful. Touching just briefly on what you said, Chairman, about what works with your children, my children are 31, 30, and 21, and that didn't work with them for me. I couldn't follow them around enough. I needed to instill in them the desire to do better, and that's what I'm talking about with this process. This board was a shining example of success when they adopted that first one with cooperation from the environmental community, agriculture, and staff. The exact opposite of what we saw at the beginning of the adoption of a conditional conditional waiver in the Central Valley region at the same time period. The Farm Bureau and the seven county farm bureaus in the region have worked very hard with the other agricultural interests to develop a detailed agricultural proposal that we submitted to the board in December of 2010. The diversity within the ag community requires this flexible approach that can address a variety of commodities, topography issues, cultural practices, and other differences in the region. This is why we beefed up that 2010 proposal and have come forward with this voluntary coalition model that Mark, because I keep messing up his name, I'm afraid I'm saying Dr. Muertos, which means Dr. Death.
Los Muertos.
Yeah, no,
Los Muertos.
I know how to say it, but it never comes out just right. I met him for the first time on the phone yesterday and then in person today. So even though he made the stature comment, I don't want to say the wrong thing pronouncing his name. But this is why we beefed that proposal up, to try and give an option to growers that choose to use it or needed to use it. We look forward to working with you in a collaborative way, hope we can, to achieve our mutual goals of protecting and improving water quality in the region. Water quality is important to all of us. My friends that I work with in the legislature, in the environmental community, in the environmental justice community, as well as growers, it's extremely important to all of us. One last real quick comment. When I worked for the State Board, I got in trouble for some of my analogies a lot of time. So I don't work for them anymore, so I can't get in trouble with Fran, but she might admonish me later. But I look at this edge of field monitoring to be somewhat similar to trying to address the water quality issues in the city of Salinas by monitoring everybody's wastewater discharge into the greater system instead of looking at our water treatment facilities and seeing what we can do there in that larger way. In the Central Valley, the process has been very good at using the coalitions to address water quality issues where these monitoring sites are located in strategic places that the regional board has to approve. And this is very similar to that, because I know there seems to be a lot of disconnect between edge of field monitoring and the monitoring that we put forward. Does that make sense? No. I'm getting a puzzled look.
We have 40 stations now, 20 in the north, 20 in the south, 50 that have been approved by the board, and that's the basis for a lot of our data. So, I mean, it looks like staff has taken it to the next step with some edge-of-field monitoring. I mean, isn't that where the kind of the rubber meets the road? I mean, if there's nothing coming off your land, then boom, you don't have a discharge that's problematic.
What I learned working at the State Water Board with the engineers and the scientists in Division of Water Quality and others is that we will never have enough, and I hate this terminology, but it's water cops to make sure that edge of field monitoring is going to get us the results we want. And that's why we have a cooperative program to incentivize farmers and ranchers that are irrigating to improve water quality. Even if the state was flush today, the Water Board does not have the number of people not only to go and police that, but to look at all of that data. Look at how difficult it's been for staff to look at the data from 2004 until now. It's been extremely difficult to do that. So, and there's been a lot of talk about different people, staff, and how they've worked or haven't worked, and that's not real productive. What I've learned, again, working at the State Water Board, is there are a lot of very good, very fine people at the state and at the region boards trying to do good work, but there's a disconnect in the process and in communicating, and for whatever reason, that's where the breakdown really starts to come into place.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make a quick statement. In relation to Mayor Delgado's question, and it was a very good point that you brought up about discharging water that was beyond the established allowance limits. Let's just talk nitrates, okay? If I am pumping water, and that's the reason I'm here in front of you, because there's a nitrate and groundwater problem. If I'm pumping water that's 100 parts per million nitrates, and I'm putting it back into the ground at the edge of my field at 90, I'm out of compliance, but I've made a net improvement because I utilize those nitrates in my on my crops. So I mean that's a scary aspect that as farmers we're looking at the letter of the law says we're not in compliance, but in actuality we've made an improvement. So that's kind of a concept that we want to be able to work with staff, and that's where I think the word waiver comes in. If we're making improvements, give us credit for it. And that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, you guys have 7.5 minutes as part of your group. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Abby Taylor Silva. I'm with the Grower Shipper Association of Central California and Farmers for Water Quality. Thank you, Chairman Young and the board, for allowing this workshop today. We very much appreciate it. Today you've heard from Dr. Los Huertos about a solution for water quality improvement that is based on strong science and a dedicated interest in collaboration with the conservation and scientific communities. We hope that you, like us, are interested in moving forward with this coalition concept as an option for growers. We also hope that you will agree that it's in the Central Coast's best interest to review and begin working together on this coalition concept as an alternative to many of the requirements of Tier 2 and Tier 3. In the staff alternative, the proposed language with respect to third-party groups is interpreted by us to mean that a third party can be used to help an individual comply with the terms of the order, but participation in a coalition does not provide for an alternative to meeting some of the other requirements of those tiers. In other words, all of the other requirements still apply. Participating in a third party just becomes an extra expense that provides no incentive. A key component of our alternative has always been that by agreeing to be subject to an audit and participating in a third party, there is a regulatory incentive by not having to meet certain Tier 2 and Tier 3 requirements. We would like to build in time to work with you and staff on this concept, as presented today by Dr. Los Huertos, so that your executive officer can consider this coalition option when the current order expires in September. We understand that you don't want to hold this process up any further, and that is not our intent. Please don't misconstrue what we're trying to do as a delay. Instead, we want to make sure that what we're trying to do is reasonable and appropriate for the ag community and the community as a whole. We currently have an extension until September. Please direct your staff to work with us to properly incorporate a coalition alternative as part of the Region 3 waiver and defer your final decision to a later date within the extension timeline. By using some of the time that we have within the current extension to work through solutions on a coalition approach with your staff, you'll be providing us the opportunity to get it right the first time. Mr. Chair, we understand that you and the board have the discretion to accept additional written information into the record. Accordingly, we ask that you please accept Dr. Los Huertos' report in the record today as an extension of the approach outlined in Attachment B and already submitted to the record.
Well, I already ruled that I wasn't going to allow any more written material in, and I have to apply that to everybody. I just can't make exceptions. Otherwise, it creates a due process issue for others, and I'm sure the environmental community would then want to comment extensively on that and have a board meeting on that. And you know, this is an evolving process we're in. This isn't the end of the line. We're just somewhere in the middle of it. So I hear your request, but I'm going to deny it.
Okay. Absolutely. I think that we would be very happy to have comment on Dr. Los Huertos' report. So if it was a wider open, I do understand what you're saying, but I did want to make that clear that those comments would be valuable and very much appreciated.
I understand.
Thank you.
And then hasn't staff had the opportunity to comment on the ag alternative proposal?
The staff has.
Yeah.
I think by bringing Dr. Los Huertos in the conversation as a scientist and a watershed coordinator for many years, and perhaps bringing some new ideas and detail to Attachment B, perhaps there would be an opportunity to revisit that process. I think that he has very diligently tried to address many of staff's concerns with the original document.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You guys still have 4.5 minutes.
I have a question,
sure.
If I might.
Yeah.
I think you used the phrase avoid certain of the Tier 2 and 3 requirements, mm-hmm. if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
Which Tier 2 requirements do you want to avoid?
The Tier 2 and Tier 3 requirements as a whole, excepting the NOI, the cooperative or individual on-farm monitoring as a grower chooses, and the submittal and the working on a farm plan. So all other requirements of a Tier 2 or Tier 3 grower, if they chose to be a part of the coalition, would not apply.
Let's do this so that we're all clear what you're asking. Can staff put that slide up?
It have the components? Tier requirements?
Yes, so that I know exactly what you're referring to.
Sure.
The three-column...
Okay.
These are all Tier 2. The nitrogen.
Tier 2 requirements.
Okay.
Onerous Tier 2.
My question was, which Tier 2 requirements are you want to avoid?
All except the filing notice of intent, the farm plan, and the participation in a surface water monitoring program or individual on-farm monitoring if that is the grower's choice when presented the options. So all other listed requirements for Tier 2 would then be met by participation in the coalition.
What would the coalition require that? I mean, I don't. Are you saying the coalition would not require that?
The coalition would require a grower's participation in the audit and then participation in the practice effectiveness evaluation program for 10% of growers. So they would have similar requirements in a different fashion. So it wouldn't be reported to the board individually. There would be reporting in aggregate. And many of the same concerns and issues would be addressed, but through the farm plans and the audits and the follow-up audits to the highest priority 10% of growers.
Okay. Mr. Johnston.
So if I understand it, what you're saying is, what you're proposing is, instead of substituting the ag alternative for the draft order, giving farmers a choice between being subject to one or the other, essentially?
That is correct. This would be essentially another option for the growing community.
Thank you.
Just a quick clarification on that. The option for certain portions of the draft order, a good portion of the draft order, remain intact and applicable to everybody, and those are the parts in black that are identified here that apply equally to tiers 1, 2, and 3 as currently proposed in the staff order. It's been, as it's laid out, there are additional requirements that also apply to tier 2 and tier 3, and it creates an alternative to complying with those portions of the order, but not the order as a whole.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It's me. If it would be helpful, I made a slide that bulleted a summary of the actual deletions and additions from the red line strikeout from the alternative. If that would be helpful, I could put that.
Those Did we slides. See that before? Have we
We've seen,
it
in bullet lists in the September staff report and the July,
right.
I think the July staff report. I just made it easy to look at if you'd like to.
You want to see that? Okay.
It's a little bit wordy because I was just rushing to get the information on the slide. But so this first slide shows the specific conditions that were deleted that would be conditions that applied to all enrolled growers. So the containment structures, implementing chemical storage and handling, implementing management practices related to exposing sediment to runoff and practice, site conditions that expose sediment to runoff and practices. Oops. that way. Okay. Thank you. Okay, and then it goes on, the provision to implement management practices to prevent discharge of sediment erosion from stormwater runoff. I don't know if you want me to read them out, but
and these are all things that would be deleted.
Well, let's have some clarifications here, Mr. Chair, that, you know, we in this process, you know, we submitted a complete strikeout underlined version of the draft order that incorporated not just the ag alternative, but we also addressed a number of other provisions unrelated to the ag alternative to which we had concerns with. And we submitted extensive comments with respect to those. In those, since then, the draft order, of course, has changed, which we have not then gone back through and done any type of a strikeout and underline because we were trying to limit and focus in on the ag alternative. We would probably, from those original deletions that we proposed, I know the staff has addressed some of those. There has been language changes that have been helpful in addressing some of those concerns. So I think I would hate for us to focus on these deletions and provisions when what we're really talking about is the incorporation of the alternative.
Okay. All right. Well, and so it sounds like this is going to change after they submit their comments before the next.
I just thought you might want to see the details
no,
related
I understand,
to the
but it
the
sounds
other.
Like that this okay. may not be the final version, but should Lisa continue, you guys?
I do just want to see the Tier 2, the ones that were, there's another set that refer to the requirements that were deleted relative to Tier 2 and Tier 3,
go ahead.
If you want to see those.
Right. Okay.
Oops. Tier 3. And I want to make sure to add to what Ms. Dunham just said, that some of these, for some of these, there are very clear replacement or other types of requirements or
that they would substitute in.
Right, but they aren't the same. So, for example, cooperative monitoring instead of individual monitoring, and, you know, we don't need to go into that level of detail now, but.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. This
but these
on
are
to
the additions,
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which we can look
additions.
At too.
These are also just a reminder. These are all in the record already, and so you can look at the submittal from I think it's March 17th, and you can actually see the red line strike out in the additions.
There's only one more.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything else? You guys have 4.5 minutes.
If we may, we'd like to reserve that time for a public comment by any of the members who spoke before, if we may do that as we have in the past.
After public comment?
Or during
yeah.
public comment?
Well, we'll see what time it is.
Okay.
Thank
you.
At this rate, it may be quite late. So if there's anything else you want to tell us, I would do it now.
We understand. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Just one comment. So the example that Bobby brought up is really good in terms of pumping groundwater. So I worry, this is actually where my brain was going, I worry that people that have contaminated groundwaters aren't going to pump those groundwaters because they can't comply with the ag order because their runoff is going to be very high in nitrate. What's the alternative? Dig deeper, go to a deeper aquifer. Again, it's conjecture, but it's a potential unintended consequence of the ag order. Okay.
So let me ask staff the hypothetical then. Someone is pumping groundwater, it has 100 parts per million of nitrate. I mean, even if they use, let's say they could use half of the nitrate in that groundwater and then they want to discharge it back to their land. Is that a problem?
The situation that Mr. Martin described, I don't believe is a problem. And let me answer it in terms of he mentioned he would automatically be out of compliance.
Well, is it, forgetting about what the source is, because I think he was trying to say they're not being recognized for improving water quality. But I think my question really is, what if a farm is using water on their land which has levels of nitrate in it that are above receiving water standards?
And then it runs off, is what you're saying.
Well, let's see. Does groundwater have a numeric standard?
Or
groundwater does.
Or
okay.
So the order, the draft, the proposed draft order does not include any effluent limits. And so the board, using this order, could not enforce based upon that data alone, even if we wanted to.
Okay.
Right. So we would look at the whole picture, and actually we tried to clarify that in a couple of different sections in the order, in Condition 10 and Condition 82,
okay.
where it specifies that we're looking at, let me just read it, actually. So as defined in Condition 82, the Water Board would consider all of the following in determining compliance: compliance with time schedules, effectiveness of management practices, effectiveness of treatment control, the results of individual monitoring, the results of cooperative watershed monitoring, and other information used to demonstrate progress towards water quality improvement. So if someone is making an improvement, right, pumping water that's at 100, and using irrigation nutrient management practices to reduce that to 90, that would be that's the type of information we would be used to evaluate compliance, as we described in Condition 82.
Well, to evaluate compliance, is he in compliance?
Yes. If he's done everything to reduce his load.
Despite the fact that the levels in his discharge are elevated.
Yes. Now, if a grower did nothing to minimize their discharge, or, for example, created a problem with runoff. So let's say there's irrigation efficiency problems or something like that, and it's creating more problems with sediment or whatever else, then that would be a different case. But in this case, he's controlling and minimizing.
That's what we want to see. So that would be a good thing.
What I'm getting is that the milestone for Tier 3 is at, in nutrient waste, I'm looking at page 38 of Attachment 1 of the draft order, is a 50% load reduction by October 1, 2014 in nutrients in individual surface water. Well, that's surface water, okay. I see, you're right. In groundwater, it says nitrate waste discharges to groundwater achieve annual reduction to groundwater based on in nitrogen loading based on irrigation, nutrient management, plan effectiveness, and load evaluation. So what is that? Can you translate that for me?
So basically that means to look. So the way you can measure pollution is looking at inputs or outputs. Right, and so when you're looking at your inputs, and if we're using nitrogen that would load to groundwater, it's looking at the progress of that reduction in the load over time. And so all we're saying is make improvements. We're seeing a reduction in loading through irrigation nutrient management practices, fertilizer efficiency, whatever practices the grower decides to do. There's nothing prescriptive about what they have to do.
So for his situation, Mr. Martin's situation, where he's pumping water with a hypothetical nitrogen content of 100, what is it, 100 milligrams a liter. What this standard would say is that each year the load of what percolated from his irrigation would have to decrease?
If he's not adding anything to the system, that's what we're looking to do. He's actually using up fertilizer or using up nitrogen, and so he's making progress, and that we would evaluate that information.
I might as well use up some more time.
Go ahead.
It is a really tough one to deal with, because even the experts will tell you that it's not a one for one formula. If you're pumping 100. And if prescriptive, it shows that basically this is all you need for that crop of head lettuce, is what's in that water. If you try to farm it with that water alone, without added nutrients, it won't size. It won't make a crop. You won't have anything at all out of it. So there, you have to understand, you're still going to have inputs. And it could be construed by staff that those inputs were not necessary. So we have to make sure that we understand there's still going to be some necessary applications of fertilizer to that crop. The nitrogen in that water alone will not grow a crop. In most cases, it won't. I've been told that by a lot of PhDs and a lot of soil conservation experts, and Tim Hartz himself will tell you that. So it's not a one for one. I just want to make sure it's not a clear, easy formula to use.
Go ahead, Angela.
Thank you.
Did you want to comment on that?
Sure. So that's a grower through, let's hypothetically say a Tier 3 grower through the use of an irrigation nutrient management plan, determines in his specific case or her specific case the amount of nitrogen the crop needs, and then documents that to the board. And that's the basis for our evaluation.
It sounds like if someone, there may be other inputs, but as long as the levels in the discharge are not over what was in the input water, the use water, that they are managing their nitrogen and they're not causing, well, an exceedance of at least what's in the groundwater as it is. Right?
That's correct. And we incorporated the use of an irrigation nutrient management plan similar to what the concepts described by Mr. Martin and also Dr. Los Huertos to accommodate that flexibility so growers can choose however they want to within the context of an irrigation nutrient management plan, practices, crop need for nitrogen, how whether or not they want to treat or control is all within that context to allow the flexibility.
Okay.
Just a very quick note on with the response to that. I think it's important to put all of that into context when we look at general condition number 21 under the water quality standards where it says dischargers must comply with applicable water quality standards. It doesn't recognize the time schedule components. The time schedule components only apply to Tier 3. So if you were Bob Martin in Tier 1 and Tier 2, you wouldn't have that discretion or that enforcement discretion that they're talking about that is set forth in the time schedule. So if that's not in the intent, then we need to do some fine-tuning on the drafting because as I read this, people are liable on day one with no time schedule because it's not as accept as in compliance with the time schedule. There's no exception there. It's you must be in compliance with water quality standards on day one. So I think that's an important component of all of this. And I also, just to note that, you know, I appreciate the ability for the board to have discretion with their enforcement, but I cannot advise my clients to enter into something that puts them in liability on day one and take a risk of whether someone's going to enforce on them later or not.
Sure. Staff, could you comment on Ms. Dunham's?
Well, I can comment on that. So under the water code, the board is issuing this waiver under Water Code Section 13269, which requires that the board require compliance with the basin plan standards. So the order has to require compliance with that. That's the same as every other person who gets waste discharge requirements or permits. You require compliance with water quality standards, and except in the case of NPDES permits where there's strict compliance, even if you're not meeting it, doesn't mean they're automatically subject to enforcement action because they aren't meeting it. They just work on meeting it, and you take enforcement at your discretion. But you can't not require compliance with water quality standards because they might have a hard time meeting it. That's not the way it works. You have to require compliance.
But I mean, it sounds like what Ms. Dunham is saying is that potentially someone on day one in Tier 1 or 2 could
be an
immediate violation for...
But it's not strict compliance in the sense that they're not subject to some penalty because of that. They're not subject to citizen suits because of that. It's just something that they have to work towards meeting. And that's consistent with the State Board's non-point source policy, which you're obligated to implement, is that you have to require compliance with water quality standards. So I just don't agree with her interpretation of either that federal case that she mentioned or the statute that somehow you're going to be suddenly get an enforcement action because you adopt an order that says you have to comply with water quality standards. Every one of your orders requires compliance with water quality standards. That's the norm. That's your obligation. So I just don't agree with her interpretation, and so leave it at that.
All right. So are you guys done with your presentation?
Since I haven't spoken, I'll just say something. Carrie Fisher, Farm Bureau. And Francis, we appreciate what you're saying, and I think our main point is, although that might be your interpretation and how you and your staff are framing the order, when you actually get down to reading the specific language of the order, that's not how it comes out in the wash. And so although that might be your intent, I read it the same way that Tess would read it and advise her clients, that the bottom line would be compliance on day one. So if that really is not the intent, then there does need to be some change in the actual language of the order. Thank you.
I wonder if staff can...
Well, what I was going to suggest is that, you know, we can take under advisement the comments and we can go look at it, and if we need to make proposed revisions to it to make that clear, what enforcement means, then that we can do that.
Well, one thing I've noticed, we've had this come up a couple of times and we're only into the first group, is that, you know, there's the fear of enforcement and repercussions and reprisals. So I think that anything we can do with our language that at least clarifies, you know, what compliance means and what might trigger, you know, enforcement would be helpful.
Okay.
Now, I mean, I can't disagree with, you know, their interpretation and reading that. Sounds that way. And I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Also, but I think if staff can come up with some additional language for that, it I think would be helpful.
Okay, well, we'll look at it.
Okay.
And I just would, just to mention again, that conditions number 10 and 8, we've heard this comment before, and we attempted to do that in those two conditions, number 10 and 82. And so if there's something more that's necessary that's not clear about how we would evaluate compliance and conduct enforcement, then we can consider that.
Okay. All right. This is the end of the first group. We could take a break. Okay. And then the next group, Mr. Briggs, is who?
We can go to the environmental group presentation.
Which one is that? Andrea Ventura. Nathan Alley, right?
No, Andrea Ventura's kind of solo.
Solo, but of the 11 minutes are hers. Okay.